If you don't find a way to look after your mental health, you are going to become ill.
Hi everybody, I'm Duncan Krieger. Welcome to Defendercast. Finally, we get a chance to show you guys something slightly different. We are recording a podcast, both in sound and on video, and I'm incredibly excited to bring the next few guests to you. Please hold on to your seats and enjoy the ride. Just before I go, I don't get a chance to do this very often. Please make sure that you leave a little comment wherever you're watching or listening. Thumbs up would be really nice, and subscribe so that you are kept up to date with what we're up to. There is a mailing list which I will ask you to subscribe to for all tab things, and most importantly, don't forget to give me some feedback because I'd really appreciate it. That was a fantastic podcast. You guys are in for a treat. I just interviewed Fergus Dyer-Smith of Wooshi, which is W-O-O-S-H-I-I. It was written on Fergus's chest, wooshi.com. We touched on some interesting subjects. We obviously talked a lot about Wooshi and about the scale of the clients that Fergus has attracted, Coca-Cola, Hilton, booking.com, sort of a client list for any business to die for. We also talked a lot about the upcoming release of 5G and how that's going to really impact video and everything else, and potentially property and some other things. We talked about mental health for in the workplace, and also mental health specifically for entrepreneurs, which I found extremely interesting. It's the second time today that Gary V's come up. He's unavoidable, to be honest with you. And also the death potentially of Hero Hub Hygiene, which has been a well-trodden path in the video community. And I absolutely loved it. We're at Ministry of Sound in London, their old headquarters, and the whole experience today has been fantastic. So I really hope you enjoy it. Let us know what you think. So good afternoon. I'm Duncan Krieger. Welcome to Defendercast. This is episode 4, I think. And we are with Fergus from Wooshi, who has become a friend of mine, and I'm very pleased that you're here. Thank you very much for your time.
Happy to be here.
Well, we're at your office, so it wasn't
happy
too
to
far.
Be here.
We're currently at the Ministry, do they call it?
Yeah, so this actual plot's called the Ministry, but it's part of the Ministry of Sound, so people will be familiar with that.
Yeah.
But I think originally this was their offices until they essentially got bought by Sony and then moved on to other places and have turned this into what it is today.
I just had a tour around the building with Fergus.
Quick tour.
I mean, amazing space. We're in a serviced office at Tab ourselves, and we've sort of learned to enjoy all the benefits that come with it. But this is a very different feel. And
yeah, they've done an amazing job of this place. I mean, we looked at, like, I mean, we've had an office at Tab once, and they're pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess you've got the benefits of being able to move around with Tab as well.
TOG.
Oh, so that's TOG, is it?
Yeah. The office.
Sorry,
group.
Tab.
Tab. We're Tab.
Right, yeah.
So TOG, the office group, is where we are. Exactly right. They've got 20 odd buildings around London now. We had hosted 20 people today, and we hired out a big room that we were discussing. We don't have the cinema here, unfortunately. Maybe we'll jump.
That was the killer when we moved, when we were looking for a new place. It's like, they showed me that, I was done.
Did you look at lots of space, or did you?
No, I looked at one. This was it, and the first thing they showed me was that cinema.
You were like, fine, sign us out.
You know, as a video company,
easy,
you're like, okay.
Yeah,
we're good.
Good, interesting. As a video company, is that how you is that how you describe Wooshi?
In terms of what we do, you know, we're all about helping companies scale out video at the end of the day. That's how we do it. Is a bit more complex, but in essence, you know, the businesses that we're working for tend to be sort of large corporate global companies that need or want to do lots and more of, you know, video content. And video's hard.
Yeah,
you know, it's in the sense that it's easy to distribute now, it's easy to get in front of your target market, but the problem that remains is production, because it involves, you know, people and you know, equipment, and so it's a nightmare for a company to try and scale that out.
Yeah.
They can build it in-house, but that doesn't scale at all. They can use sort of traditional agencies, which typically are pretty expensive, or then come to us, and, you know, we're all about building scalable solutions for those businesses that they can plug in.
So was that the vision from day one, what you've just described? So let's go back a step or two. Who is Fergus and how did you end up here?
Well, the background is a bit convoluted, but so I've always run companies since I was, forever. Well, not companies, businesses, I guess. Worked in events, worked in travel.
We can talk a bit about the events if you want, or we maybe do another time.
I don't remember any of it. but you know that was fun. But this really came up because I've always been a bit of a techie, always like since the internet began, I've been sort of had my fingers inside it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, my family has always been in film.
Okay.
And so when YouTube came about, I was like, okay, well, this is really interesting because video was the big problem that hadn't been solved online. You know, we were at those in the sort of early days, for those that remember, we were on like dial up.
Yep.
And then broadband came along. Exactly. So, broadband comes along and all of a sudden it's possible to deliver bigger files, video files across the internet. And I think originally when people first looked at the internet, they were sort of thinking TV. Like, how do we get video onto this thing and turn it into television? So when YouTube came along, I was like, okay, this is interesting. Now all of a sudden you can deliver video of the internet. Same time, you know, cameras, this sort of equipment dropped dramatically. Mm-hmm. You didn't need film anymore. And so it meant that anyone around the world could make the stuff. And so it was really a short jump for me to think, okay, well, there's going to be tons of people out there who can make great stuff, and hopefully there'll be people that want it.
So when was this?
So this is like 9 years ago. And so what started was just a community of video makers, really, with a couple of other guys that I knew. We built a site. It wasn't really supposed to be a business at the start.
Was it called Wooshare at the time?
Actually, do you know what? There's a little preamble to that, because we had a company called Wooshare. So we started off trying to build this little business, which we didn't really understand. But now looking back, I can see what it was, which was essentially Kickstarter.
Okay,
that was the idea. It was Kickstarter.
Interesting.
But anyway, didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Too so, early? Or
No, we had no idea what we were doing. It's just we built this thing. I managed to sell some investors on it, we quickly sort of got through their money. And then I thought, well, now what are we going to do? And so me and the other two guys sort of sat down. So what else do we know? And we knew online marketing. So because we'd all been in that world. So we this idea sort of formulated as stuff. I took the same investors. I just gave them stock in a new business. Said, look, you backed us in the last one. We messed it up.
Yeah.
Here's a new thing. Here's some stock. But we ran it originally just as, can we connect these people together? And then it developed into a marketplace.
Yeah.
So it was a self-serve. If you've ever used anything like Fiverr or, Uber, I guess, or eBay, it was like that sort of idea, but for the video world. Did all right. We were doing, a couple of 300 projects a month at one point, running through the system.
Wow.
But there was no real lifetime value. Mm-hmm. People don't know what that is. There was no, you'd get someone in, order one video, and that would be it. But there was a small group of customers that were using it very frequently, and it turned out they were big companies.
Yeah.
And that was a bit of a light bulb moment for us. It was like, well, hang on a sec. There is this, if they're prepared to use it, why aren't others? And that was really when it turned into a real business.
Yeah.
And now that's who we serve now. So, our customers range from, Coca-Cola to Booking.com to Google, Hilton. So it's these sort of big global businesses.
So give us an idea of what you do for, say, Hilton
we do different things for different businesses. But if you think, they have often, where we're really strong, or the stuff that we
like. Because I'm quite in tune now with, as you can see, we've got a team, we're doing it kind of more internally and trying to play to everybody's strengths, which highlights areas where we're potentially weak and we could do better.
Yeah.
We've got tons of content that we've recorded. We've used tiny pieces of it to create something hopefully interesting. Yeah. And as we start to evolve a bit more, we're starting to think, actually, we've probably lots of interesting stuff in the old archives, if you like, even though it's not all that old. So interested to know kind of how
how you, those companies are using you sort of start end to end, if you like.
So what you're so where you're working, which totally makes sense, is you know you're producing content. I'm assuming to sort of push out across social channels. You know, it's an awareness play. You're looking to build a brand, reach potential customers in the future. You're sort of building up this, I guess this following.
Yeah, for sure.
And so we will help companies do that. Mm-hmm. That's one of the areas where we work, because a lot of that is actually about building a volume. You know, how do you build out a volume of content? And you know, as you get to become a larger organization, there's a lot more opportunities to do stuff like that, but it's exponential in terms of the output. So because you know, this one podcast, as we were just discussing earlier, it could be, you know, you could cut it up, you could re-edit it, you could strip the audio, and you've got now 20 or 30 pieces of content potentially.
Sure.
That interesting?
Yeah. No, we're going to try, so we'll let you know.
Hey, folks, we've got three pieces of content, mate. Never mind. Yeah. But now you times that in a big organization by, you know, 100. Now you've got whatever that is, you know, it's a much bigger number. So that's one thing. But where we really fit in is the boring stuff. So everything from how-to videos, customer testimonials, CEO report, training, internal comms, product videos, like all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's where we excel.
Yeah,
so we really go from, I guess the quickest, simplest thing would be a news edit of some kind. You know, where we're pulling in little pieces of stock and a little piece of motion graphics or something.
Yeah.
All the way up to YouTube ads. That's sort of where we stop.
Yeah,
and then anything beyond that typically has been run by an ad agency, and it'll be a TV ad or something like that. So we're all about, and the thing about that type of content is its volume. There's generally lots of it. So if you look at, you know, Hilton as an example, or any, you know, Radisson, or any hotel group, they've got, you know, tens, hundreds of hotels.
Yeah.
All that have an opportunity to create content around showing the hotel, the location, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's not that easy for them to capture great content from those places without an absolute mission of a sort of logistical nightmare, essentially.
Yeah.
Whereas we come in, and because of the model that we have, which I can describe at some point, it means that, you know, we have a global footprint, which means we can just mobilize teams all over the world for them, for those guys. And then, you know, but we work with everyone from like biotech companies. You know, one of our biggest clients is a biotech business.
I guess the beauty of you is it doesn't matter, you know, what they're particularly selling, as long as they're doing something interesting and you can.
Yeah.
So do you organize, so they don't need any sort of internal resource as such? I guess they need a brief, they need to know what.
Sometimes they don't even have that. It all depends. I mean, it, you know, we do a lot in like B2B, and you know, where customers they know that video is an opportunity for them, sales, but they don't necessarily know how to, you know, they don't necessarily know how to use it.
Mm.
They just know that there's an opportunity there, and so, you know, in some cases we'll come in where there's no plan and help them design a plan.
Quite a consultancy, I guess. At this point, you've done a lot of, you know, I guess going through the motions with other companies, you know, like you said, that, you know, want to capture some big piece of content, we're going to chop it up. I guess we can talk a bit about Hero Hub Hygiene. And you,
which is interesting, because we're doing a podcast tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
On that.
Okay.
Because we actually can see the death of that coming.
Really? Wow.
We're looking at that now differently.
I remember the first time I spoke to you,
because
we'd been connected in an interesting way prior to that. And then all of a sudden I thought, I think I might need to talk to you about something. And then I was in Abu Dhabi actually doing a podcast with a friend of mine, which never got published.
Well, I mean, Dubai anyway.
Very hot now.
Horrible.
Yeah, it's hideous.
Never go to Dubai in July.
We just did a round table for the TAB strategy day. And one of the girls said her interesting fact was, don't go to Dubai now, it's too hot.
Yeah.
It's scorching.
I was literally there last week and it was an absolute nightmare. And that wasn't even a hot day, apparently.
I remember you mentioning Hero Hub Hygiene, and I was like, what now?
Yeah. So it's not the death of it. So it is still a good way to think about content.
Yeah.
You know, it's if you've got no framework to base anything around, it's a good way just to think about how am I going to produce stuff, you know, which is I sometimes refer to it as POW, push, pull, because Hero Hub Hygiene often gets sort of a bit mixed up. But if you think of like POW, which is like, you know, you're making a statement, you need to get in front of people. You know, push, you're pushing stuff out on a regular basis. So that could be, I know, like some sort of series that people are, you know, they're waiting to receive every yeah. week or whatever. And then pull is, you know, more like, I know, stuff that might come up in search where you're pulling them in because they've gone looking for a question.
Yeah, for so more like the how-tos. And
yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you can combine those things.
So tell me, I'm interested, so tell me where you think, what's the direction of travel there? What's changed?
So what's changed is
because a lot of people watching and listening will sort of just be kind of tuning into that what people were preaching before, and then you're obviously yeah. well ahead of the curve because you're seeing things from a completely different angle.
Yeah,
you've got all these customers, you've been doing that for a long yeah. period of time now, so tell me what's changed or what's
so
happening.
What's changed? So, well, Hero Hub Hygiene was a thing that was created by Google okay. about 5 years ago or something, maybe 6 years ago. That was there, it was there, you know, and it was convenient, obviously, because yeah. it helps people create more content.
Yeah.
But what's changed is, where's my phone? So, you know, if you look at, the best way to think about it is if you look at, like, Instagram as an example, right?
Yep.
I hope you can get that on camera, but if you go and look at your Instagram channel, but you see, what you've got now across the top is stories.
Yeah.
And then the main feed is a single item.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got five stories that I can dive into before I get anywhere near this main feed.
Yeah. yeah.
So we're looking at it now and saying, okay, there's what we call real time, make time, and prime time.
Okay. Right?
And so it's all about driving people towards prime time.
Mm-hmm.
So prime time would be, I don't know, your main video on YouTube, your sort of 10-minute, 12-minute video on YouTube, or Instagram IGTV.
Yeah.
That's the sort of prime time stuff you're trying to drive people towards it.
Yeah.
Then you've got like make time, which is content that sort of feeds up into that. So that might be your cut downs or, yeah. you know, sort of stuff that's been taken out of that video, trying to drive them in. And then real time is things like stories.
Yeah.
And so obviously you, as you go down the pyramid, you know, you've got a lot more real time because you can just do it constantly yeah. on the go.
Yeah, and I guess what's changed then is that people are now producing all this real-time content, whereas
yeah,
previously...
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't actually physically have to be real-time, but it's more, yeah. it's just more, there's more of it. And the difference is, I guess the key nuance here is, and I've just learned this, so...
Perfect,
Jonathan
share away.
Will probably tell me I've got this completely... is your everything drives up towards the prime-time video, whereas within Hero Hub Hygiene, what you'd often find was people would, like, they had the Hero ad, and then they'd have the Hub... stuff, and then they'd have a hygiene, but they weren't really all connected yeah, together in any given enough. Campaign. Whereas you look at this, it's sort of like driving people up to this main piece of content, and and that's how the algorithms are working now. So, you know, it used to be just, you know, get loads of stuff out, but now, you know, if you look at YouTube or Instagram or Facebook, it's all about quality of the content, how long people actually stay and watch that content, the guy that came up with this, he's worked a lot in publishing, and what they've seen is like a lot of the big publishers have actually seen a huge drop in the number of views that they're getting, but actually a big rise in the amount of revenue they're driving if they've switched to this much more quality content model. So people like Now This and Insider.
Okay.
They sort of switch. They're going away from these sort of viral hits and moving way more towards. So anyway, it's
interesting. Really, really interesting for me. It's very, very topical because we're trying to kind of understand this, and there's not really much point going through all this effort and then not having a clue how to have an impact.
That all said, it's easy to sort of go and talk about this stuff, you know, but. Something is better than nothing.
Yeah,
the other way,
and I guess quality of content should always be important rather than quantity or a balance of the
two. To a degree. I mean, I think, you know, some of it is just, there is definitely a volume play there. Like, if you're constantly in someone's stream, then you're going to be much more apparent and people are going to see
it. I mean,
it,
someone told me today that Gary Vee's preaching 100 pieces
100
of content
pieces
a day.
That's what he talks about. And he probably is, given, like, I mean...
He's probably got enough content to do that.
If you follow him, literally, yeah. I'm inundated with Gary. It's like Grant Cardone, similar. It's like, you know, it's relentless.
So it just, the question that comes to mind, I'm not sure I even really know, and it's nice to catch up. And so how much of, where does your job end at? So you sort of help people mobilise a team.
Mm-hmm.
They do the hard work, sort of on the ground videoing it. Then your team are still involved, or you're talking about the platform and cutting it all up and producing, let's say, 10 assets or 20 assets, whatever you can come up with. And then after that, what they do with that content and how they push it out, because it's important to you for to have a positive effect that they sort of do it in a way that you know is going to work.
Yeah.
How involved are you after you've delivered the assets?
It depends is the answer. I mean, our key competency is production execution. So, you know, the model we have is like we actually don't make anything as ourselves as a company. We built this community of like tens of thousands of creative production teams around the world connected through a platform, and we use that as a way to deliver. So that's why our core competency is essentially execution. How we do have in the building expertise on distribution, strategy, and creative. It's just that's probably 10% of what we do.
Fair enough.
But you know, we're often involved through the process. But typically, you know, we're handing over assets to a company who will then give it to their social team or give it to their pay distribution or media team or agency or whatever. We try and stay as close as we can to it so that we can then say, okay, when the next stuff comes along, then we'll help you out there. And you know, with our bigger clients, really, what you know, we're trying to be an integrated part of their business, so we are just their video department. But yeah, it's not. And you know, most companies now have some sort of social team looking after those channels, and so we're just a feed for them, really.
The sounding board, or as well.
Yeah, and we're very video focused. So what we understand is, okay, if you know, the social team might be great on Facebook and Instagram, and maybe probably not YouTube, but they won't specifically understand video in those platforms.
Yeah.
They'll understand 80% of it. They won't understand the last 20%, which is obviously where we can come in and help.
Yeah. Interesting. So tell us about the platform, about the tech side of the platform.
So the tech side's gone through different variations. I mean, it at its heart, it's a community of production people around the world.
Yeah.
Animators, video makers, you know, 3D, CGI, or just anything Everything. You can think of. Stop motion, drone, like whatever it is, we've got them in this network, which means that when a company and it's everywhere, so there almost isn't a country that we want to have a presence in. So if a business comes to us and says, right, we want to capture in, you know, we need a shot in Australia and a shot in China and then a shot in Brazil, then we can get that footage from local teams.
Yeah. Which is obviously much more cost effective than flying everyone around the world.
And then what we do as a unit is we'll manage, you know, we make sure that the stuff's all you know, of a certain quality, the standards are maintained, you know, a lot of quality control basically.
Do you do that here?
Yeah. So while we've got a base we've got a base in Lithuania here, Barcelona and San Francisco.
So I mean, Wuxi do that rather than
essentially that's really what our business like within the company that we're all about. Looking after the client, essentially.
Yeah.
Make sure the client doesn't have to deal with all this.
So it's less
shit.
About the sort of, I guess you have to manage both sides carefully but it's less about sort of looking after the guys that you're paying to do the work.
We look after them in the sense that we bring them work.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
But they're not your client, I guess.
They're not 100% our client, but you know, the people that we really have to make sure we're delivering for are obviously our customers. So that's the model. The tech that sits in the middle is the thing that manages the connection, that helps us source. Like we can really quickly put out a request, find a team, but it does all sorts of other things during the process.
So do you
do that,
or does the client, as in, I'm just using Hilton because they've come up before. Yeah. They don't log into your back or into their system, so they'll come to you and say, "This is what we need."
Yep.
And then you go, use.
Yeah, they literally, you know, what we learned, we did try and sell them on that
once
upon a time, didn't work.
No. And then they're going to hire the wrong team, and then it's going to be
in
the wrong place at the wrong time.
And it's you're just giving them work. That's what we discovered was that actually, you know, you give them a platform, what you've essentially done is said, here's some work for you to do.
It's
not what they want. Yeah. They want you to take the work away. So it's our platform to help us scale out production. And then it does loads of other things like, you know, file transfer, you know, real time, like it's got like almost like a Slack channel inside it.
Yeah.
You know, markup videos, comments, all sorts of, you know, scheduling. Basically, it's helps us run productions at scale.
And are you always trying to add to that pool of what do people need to do if they want to
go to wuxi.com and find the button that says join up?
Yeah.
And then they won't be able to connect their Vimeo channel. Just discovered today, but you sort of create a profile, connect connect either a Vimeo or a YouTube channel.
So you can vet their,
exactly. Yeah,
is that the purpose?
Yeah, it's a basic sort of, like, if you haven't got videos that we can see and they're not on a, you know, the good thing about Vimeo, for example, is they've done a lot of work around, like, passing off, so you can't, it's more difficult to upload a video onto Vimeo, class it as your own if someone has already put it on theirs.
Fair enough.
They have a good system. So that's just a little bit of, you know, helps us make sure that people are who they say they are.
Yeah.
But we've got bundles of other things that help us do that as well. So we look at, you know, all their social profiles, and there's quite a lot in the background that goes on.
Do you have to do a lot of that manually, I guess?
No, a lot of that happens automatically.
Okay.
And there's things as well that we've learned from just behavior. So how they sign up, how much time they spend, how quickly they do it. All that actually.
Almost get like a rating.
Yeah, they get a rating. So we can see their rating, and then they'll get feedback scores, and so yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You can never over communicate with a client. So a client is never going to say to you, "Stop sending me updates about how the video is going." But they're highly likely to turn around and say, "What's going on? I haven't had an update." Yeah. So it, you know, I try and drive into them, but I'd rather you were sending them an email every day that told them what had gone on, even if nothing had gone on, than, you know, waiting 2 weeks and then feeling like they're in the dark. So that's one sort of part of, you know, how you maintain a relationship. And the other one is, we have this thing, it's not my idea, stolen from one of the founders of Airbnb, but it's around this, have you come across this 7-star service?
No.
So it's, well, go and look it up, but it's this great little exercise that you can run. And the way it works is this, is you sort of say to, you know, get a gang of the company together and you say, right, let's plan out what a 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star service looks like. And obviously everyone comes up with a 5-star, and they get to 5-star and they're like, and let's say it's us, for example, saying, okay, you know, 5-star is, you know, they get the video on in a book and on a CD, and, you know, everything's wrapped up and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And everyone's like, great, awesome. They will feel like the job's done. They say, right, now it's designed 6 stars. So, okay, 6 stars. So, you know, maybe we, you know, we take them out for dinner afterwards, yeah? And then you go, right, now let's do 7 stars. Mm. And you go, well, bloody hell, so enough 7 stars. Okay, well, maybe, you know, they get a discount on the next video. And then you keep going all the way to 15 stars. And by the time you get 15 stars, you're starting to think, right, okay, private jet to, you know, my island, to an island, and, you know, all, I hope the whole family, hotel, the whole family. Yeah, right.
Cost going through the roof, right?
And so it gets so ridiculous. But once you get to that 15 star, when you then look back at 7 star doesn't actually sound or feel that ridiculous.
Mm.
And so you can sort of say, well, look, why don't we do 7 star?
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, yeah, that's a good one. So we've just sort of gone through this exercise, and some really cool stuff's come out. Like, you know, we've got, like, now wrap gifts that go out. So it was something that used to happen in the old film world was, you know, once you had a wrap party when the thing closed, mm-hmm. but you'd give wrap gifts. So you would give, you know, the editor and the director would often give gifts to each other.
Yeah.
So like, well, what's 20 quid, 30 quid out of the budget? You know, so stuff like that. So that, I think those two things for me, I guess there's a third thing that I always wrap in, which is, like, great video content is table stakes for us. Like, every other video company on the planet
wants great
can be creating great video,
and they want to. At the minimum, they want to do that.
Bare minimum, right? So, how do we stand out? Well, let's create a service that they talk about. No one's going to say, "Oh, these guys are amazing; they create great video," because everyone's creating great video. Yeah, that's what we do. So, let's create a service that they're going to talk about. So, when they say, "Geez, man, you've got to work with these guys," it's unbelievable. Yeah.
So what else was there that came out? Or was there anything else particularly for the 7-star service that you would have thought before?
I had this thing called Wookiees, which everyone laughs at, but it was like, let's send them cookies called
Everything's called Woo.
So we're going to be like fortune cookies, which had, when you crack them open, had little sort of tidbits, marketing tidbits inside.
Yeah.
And my thinking had been, well, you give them, no one's going to eat more than like one.
Is one of them going to be, you should do more videos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then they'll share them out, won't they, with their consent. So that was, I can't remember what they were all, but there was some good stuff in there.
What bits... Obviously your role's changed since it was just you, but the role that you're, I'm always interested talking to other kind of entrepreneurs or business owners about what you're spending your time doing.
It changes,
but are you able to do what you think you're best at, I guess, or are you always being dragged into things that sort of hold you back from being able to execute your big vision?
That is a good question. So I think it's twofold, I would say. So I would say the role changes as the company grows. And I think the most difficult bit is there are some things that I know I'm good at, but I know that if I do them, I'm not going to be able to actually get on with the job that I'm supposed to do. Yeah. And right now in my head, my sort of brain is saying, what you need to be doing, Fergus, is making sure that the people in the company have got everything they need to perform the best that they can. Yeah. That you've got great people in the business, and get out and see your customers.
Yeah,
just do those three things. Yeah. And you know, everyone sort of knows, obviously you set the vision, every set sort of people know where we're going. So, you know, constantly communicate where we're going, and make sure that you remove any blockages and get out and see customers. But then I've got we're just building a marketing team, and I'm sort of like itching to get in there and sort of help. But so I think that's the most difficult bit, is you may know that you are good at something, but you've got to get other people into
that. So on the team element, yeah. In terms of, I mean, we've asked this to a few people before, but what's the most important thing when building the team out from Wuxi?
I think that, so obviously there's lots of hiring going on. There's a fair bit of hiring going on at the moment, and I've got people that are, for the first time, really, I mean, they've always had teams, but now they're really starting to build them out. And I've obviously done that before, but you know, so I've got a little bit of insight, but then I've got a COO who's done it to a much bigger degree than I ever have. So I think you want people to take work away from you. That's, you know, so you want to make sure that when you bring someone in, especially in a young company, there's a temptation to bring someone in who's a little bit cheaper, and think, well, we'll help them out with that bit.
Yeah.
But it never works. You bring that person in, and then you're spending, you know, time trying to teach them.
And you still have to do it yourself.
And then you have to end up doing it yourself, yeah. Right? Yeah, one of the two. So it's always, I think, when you're building, especially at this stage, it's thinking, is this person going to take work away from me, or are they going to create work for me? And that's it's not easy, because you're sort of doing it in an interview, off a CV, off references. You're trying to, you know... But I can see already, like, there's a couple of people we've hired recently who are just phenomenal. And I'm just like,
I guess that's because you just touched on, you're finding a place where you can say, right, we're not going to, we're not going to recruit the cheapest person we can find. We're going to hire someone absolutely brilliant because we...
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fortunate position. We've raised some money recently, which means that I've got a bit of cash in the bank to be able to go and hire. Like, but I, wasn't up until, so I've always had to think... Yeah, yeah. An extra 10 grand a year is like, and so I get it. It's, but I think you're better off if you're going to hire someone, then you may as well hire the best person you possibly can, pay a bit more, because it will pay you back.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah. That's one interesting thing about building a team. I think, it's a very simple observation, but I think it's a very powerful one, which is, exactly as you just said, pay a bit more and hopefully you get that back in, even if in your own time, which you know how valuable that is now, because you'd like to be doing more than one thing at the same time. And if you can hand off things to someone competent that you trust or rely on, that's representing Wuxi in the right way, then it means you can start to think about, right, I'm going to use some of my time to do what I want to do or what I'm really good at.
You always get like, one of these things I used to, when you have these things that you sort of tout and then you think about, why, I've been saying that for years, and then I don't know if I believe it. But I used to always say, like, CEO got basically three jobs: set a vision, which is like a half job, hire great people and make sure the company doesn't run out of money,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
CEO or COO?
CEO.
CEO, yeah? Fun, yeah.
So my job was, make sure the company doesn't run out of money,
yeah.
Hire great people and set the sort of direction for the business. Which is great, but how do you hire great people? Like, no one tells. So I've been saying that for years, and I'm thinking, hang on a sec, but it doesn't really help me. It's just a statement. So hiring great people is hard, man. It's like, I've messed up so many people I've hired and just thought, God, that was just not right. But I think one of those old adages, which is, what's the hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah.
Actually. which is also hard because firing is horrible,
especially quickly. You feel like you're not giving it time.
Exactly. I have learned now that, do you know what, it really does pay dividends. The quicker you realize this was the wrong person, and you move on, the better for them, the better for you.
It's only
painful for everybody if you don't.
I was just thinking as you said that about a CEO's job. I mean, especially in the beginning, it's absolutely everything. Ideas, hiring the wrong people, and then having to do the work at the same time.
Especially if you're not a technical person or something like that. Because, like, if you're a tech business, for example, maybe you get like maybe it's you and one other guy or girl who she or he is building stuff.
Yeah.
Loads of value.
Yeah.
So your job's just everything else.
Yeah, for sure.
And you better make something quick because you're just an expense, really. You're not building anything. Find customers or whatever else. But yeah.
Interesting.
So what's the next step for Wooshie then? I mean, obviously you've moved into this amazing space.
Yeah, so it's more of the same, really. I mean, we've worked out where we sit, and there's a world of opportunity there for us. So now it's about, can we execute? Can we build enough customers? Deliver for those customers and do it quick enough before we run out of money.
I mean, your timing is impeccable. I mean, it was nine years. No, but fine. But I mean, okay. So maybe the time. What I meant to say is the time is right now for you to have an established business where you've got amazing customer base. You know, names that any company would dream to have.
Yeah. Time is a great thing. I think it's one of those things where another thing is if you can stay alive long enough, you get lucky type of thing. The issue with timing is it's being alive when the right timing hits.
Oh, definitely.
And so many businesses fail or go out of business because they just don't stay
right alive. Business, right people, delivered well, but just
wrong time.
Yeah. Too early,
just
too late.
5 years later, they would have nailed it.
Yeah.
And so some of that is, well, can you just stay alive long enough? Mm. Is it, you know, what's the movie? Just Stay Alive. The Mohicans. Just stay alive. And I'm just isn't it? It's just like, just stay alive long enough to realise.
Yeah, I mean, my business is sort of a step before that, which we need to sort of get going and then stay alive. Right. I've preached for a long time, timing is everything. And sometimes you need to make difficult decisions, you know, that you just, like you said, it has to be the right time. The momentum of travel has to be with you. And then you need to also be aware that, you know, where are we? It's not just that it's the right time, because it might be the right time and you've missed it.
True. Yeah. I mean, you could be too late as well. I mean, there's a guy called Bill Gross who, I don't know if you've ever come across him, but he's sort of founded, like, I don't know, 100 companies or something. Most of them sold to Google and all sorts of, a lot in the tech industry. And you can look it up online. I think it's a TED talk or something. And he does a whole thing on, he looked at, of all the companies that they had and that had been successful, they looked at funding, people, and timing.
Okay.
And the thing that was the biggest in all of the big successes was timing.
Yeah. So doesn't surprise me.
It's super interesting.
We'll flash some of that up on the screen.
It's all about timing. So, I mean, in terms of, you know, Wooshie's is getting established now, and obviously Duncan, you know, we're getting there with Tab. We've got a lot to do, but you know, between you guys, what's the toughest lesson that you've sort of had so far? It doesn't need to be you know the current company, but the toughest lesson for, you know, for people looking on and you know those young people out there wanting to join this big bad world.
Tough lessons. I think. Do you know what? So sometimes when I get asked to talk to, you know, people that are coming into this world, especially younger guys, the biggest thing I realized, and the thing that almost messed me up, was mental health. If you don't find a way to look after your mental health, you are going to become ill. And it's because, you know, everyone goes through ups and downs, right? Everyone has ups and downs in their life.
Good days, bad days.
Good days, bad days, right? Some people that affects more than others, right? The thing about and you know, even us as humans aren't really designed to deal with that up and down. Like modern day sort of life doesn't help you deal with that.
Much more turbulent than
right.
It.
Yeah. do that in a company,
yeah,
you've got ups and downs every hour,
yeah,
right? You can be on the highest high and then the lowest low and the highest high, and it's just like, up, and this entire like up and down stuff, it will grind and grind and grind and grind and grind and grind. And, you know, it could go on for years. And if you don't find some way to actually cope with that and deal with it, you will make yourself ill, almost undoubtedly.
Yeah.
And so the biggest thing I learned was how to deal with that, you know, how to deal with that, how to flatten out the peaks and troughs. They're still there.
Yeah.
And they're still up and down. It's just I've found a way to sort of like, okay, how do I cut the top off the peaks and how do I, you know, bottom out the troughs so that it's just not such a big, you know, and I definitely, you know.
Something I would definitely like to talk more about. I mean, I've grown up sort of with very strong views, which have certainly changed over. I mean, I've said this before, but I grew up in a working world where you left your problems at home. You know, yeah, you arrive at 9, right, you do yeah, your work, then you go home.
You're a Brit.
Yeah. Like, no one wants to hear about it. No one wants to talk about it. It's your own problems. I got my own problems. And obviously, over the last 10 years or maybe 5 years, even more so, it's just not taboo anymore. And it's like, exactly like you said. I mean, now it's perfectly acceptable that everybody has ups and downs. I feel fortunate. Listening to you makes me a bit concerned. I feel fortunate that it doesn't really seem to affect me. But I guess what I'm sort of learning to understand is be aware that you might feel...
Well, you just might have a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
That, you know, so my problem was, it's definitely like... You know, I come from a family of manic depressives, for God's sake. Yeah. So I have grew up with this
yeah,
stuff. And same thing, like a Navy family, you know, like you didn't talk about any stuff. And I'm not suggesting necessarily you need to talk about it now. I know it's sort of popular and all the rest of it. I just think for your own, you don't have to talk to anyone in particular. You just have to mindful. Find a mechanism to do it. And you know.
Could you give us just an example of.
So I have two things. Like the two ways I can tell you exactly what they are. One is mindfulness practice, which I know has become really popular, but it does definitely work because it allows you to, like, the biggest thing is when you get caught up in this of stuff and you just don't recognize that you've sort of got into this state. And actually all mindfulness does is it just makes you go, oh, hang on a sec, that is, you've wound yourself up here, calm down, you know. And it takes a fraction of a second to realise.
Just its basic form is that take a step back or take a step out.
It's both, you know. And so that's what it sort of trains you to do. It's just it's a practice. So you just trains you to recognise your own state of mind. And that's half the problem most of the time. You just don't realise that you've wound yourself up into a knot. And so you just wake up angst and go to bed angst. Mm. You know. So that's one thing. And then the other one, I got really into like stoicism and which is a sort of ancient Roman, well, Greek actually, philosophy, which is really actually what's CBD is all based on. You know, it's just understanding that you know, there's stuff that happens and there's how you react to it. So, you know, the classic example I always give is like, you know, something happened and it was bad is two things. There's the thing that happened and then there's your perception of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, me losing my wallet with a tenner in it is bad. Not really, because for the guy that found it, it's good.
Yeah.
They've just got a tenner and I've just lost a tenner, but it's the same event.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the way I've sort of learned to deal with it. But it's the problem with the business, I think, is...
Everyone in every walk of life, I mean, it obviously translates down to your business as well.
Yeah.
But everyone in every...
But how do you get away from it? Like, so how do you...
How do I get away
from
it? I think I'm just so... I guess my bit of advice, what I was thinking in my head is kind of the lessons I've learned is kind of, you know, what I was thinking is don't let it affect you. Don't. I mean, I've always kind of had this idea that failure is not a bad thing. So I guess that's the lessons that I've learned is that failing can actually be a very, very good thing.
So what taught you that then? Because that's...
I guess failing a lot.
Okay.
And sort of trying new things constantly. I ran through a list of sort of, I don't know, 15 or 20 companies this morning that I've started over the last 15 years. 8 of which are still around. A couple of which have failed and I've lost money and things didn't pan out the way I thought they did. But... so for me now, looking back, I'm looking at it thinking, well, all of those failures have helped me get to where I am. I guess in the simplest possible form, my first ever job, I was working for a company who were trying to sell directory space for exhibitions. It's called exhibitions.com.
Right.
And they, you were ringing sort of every microphone company and camera company and trying to get there. It was tough. It was a tough gig. And the guy, I sat me down at my desk and picked up the phone and sellotaped it to my hand and said, right, you need to start dialing numbers out here. Yeah, seriously. And I thought it was fun at the time. I was like, okay, this is cool. And he was like, keep dialing numbers. And whenever, you know, every no is closer to a yes. You know, some people will say yes. And every no is closer to a yes. And instantly I was like, okay, cool. Like, and I was like, there's another no. Yes. Right. Yeah, we're going to get, we're closer to getting. And I guess that's mentally that was me thinking that in order to get to the end, you're going to have a rocky road. And I kind of... I enjoy, I said to you before, I don't feel like I'm working. I don't feel the pressure. I don't feel the pressure of what's going to happen if this fails, because I mean, you know, I'm way more focused and tuned in on enjoying the journey rather than just focusing on the destination. And I guess that's my, you know, my sort of way of dealing with
that.
That
is very stoic. That idea that, you know, if you focus on, Alan Watts talks about this quite a bit, like you focus on the end bit,
you know,
when you get there, then there's just another end bit sort of go after. So you know, if you focus on, so right now for me, like the thing I'm loving is the, some of the people we've got working for us are awesome. I'm learning tons off them. I'm really enjoying it, but there's always that overriding, I don't know, I still find it hard to get away from like a sense of, I don't know, as much as I've trained myself to be better at it, I'm still not great at it. I still worry about it not working out and letting down investors and people that work for me and family and all that sort of stuff. But I'm just, so it hasn't gone away. It's just, so I'm always impressed when I meet people who've managed to sort of put that aside.
Yeah. Everybody's different at the end of the day. Everyone copes with different things in different ways. I mean, you know, I found it really interesting hearing that you know, open to failing, you know, and that whole idea that you're prepared to fail in order to succeed is it kind of almost prepares you for the worst, you know, and trying to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I've said about Tab many, many times, and I'm sure I will continue to say, I said it to you earlier before we were recording, is that I'm fully expecting every day for brick walls to get built up in front of me that I was not expecting. And then it's almost kind of, for me, it's almost like I need those brick walls, because then I need to know whether we need to smash the wall down or go round it. And without those problems coming up, they're still yet to come. So I do kind of enjoy the challenge of waking up and thinking, right, what problems do we have to solve today? And I guess that's kind of what I feel my job as a CEO is chief problem solver.
That's good. Yeah,
not necessarily solving every problem myself, but identifying that it's a problem and that as a company we need to solve it, and then
I'm the chief problem identifier.
Interesting.
Does that work?
Yeah, I think that would be a good team actually. it's interesting. And you know, Bradley's talked to me as well about trying to talk more about mental health and maybe having a session on it. And we've got
I want to sort of deep because I know right now I see like lots of people,
it's such a broad term,
and I feel like, you know, it's all become a bit
mental health at work mental health affecting you either working for or running a business, I think is very interesting,
because I just, you know,
small adjustments can have such a huge impact. Definitely. Especially as the business grows and the team grows.
Yeah,
you know, there is a big thing if everybody comes in the morning feeling better, you're going to be more productive, you're going to make more sales, you're going to do your job quicker, and you're going to feel happier about it when you're done.
Yeah.
So I think it's...
like I said, I know it's a sort of popular topic at the moment, and I'm not going to poo-poo it, but it's. I think for entrepreneurs particularly, they have such a unique situation that it's really hard to understand unless you're actually there. Because at the end of the day, you cannot just go home and, you know what,
go on holiday and switch your phone off for a week.
That's not how it works. Yeah. It's like even if you could physically switch your phone off, but your brain doesn't stop.
Anyway. Interesting.
So just switching on to back onto video. So obviously, you know, Duncan, Duncan, you love Instagram. You're massive on YouTube, right? You absolutely love it. I guess, you know, what do you both see the future of video? I mean, are you, there's a lot of people say, all I hear is shorter. Some people say longer, you know, what's the future looking like for video?
I think shorter was a sort of, at one point in time, that was probably the call, because, you know, YouTube was one of the instigators of this. You know, they just said, look, whatever you put up there, you'll be able to monetize it, essentially. I think now there is definitely a shift to, it's about engagement. So the content that you're creating needs to engage an audience, and the more it engages them, the better you're going to do. So I think that's one of the shifts that we're seeing. Now, what that generally means is, okay, it's, you know, it used to be, you know, small quantity of good quality stuff and a large volume of not so great stuff, and now it's just, no, you just need a large quality of good stuff. So
you thought quality over quantity would succeed,
like,
it's right?
Quality and quantity, I'm afraid. Sort of. So I think that's, it's definitely not going anywhere. I mean, these things are that's how we all consume content now, and there's more things coming. So we did this podcast recently on 5G, and I hadn't actually really appreciated what 5G was going to do for us, but, you know, they were essentially saying, you know, when 5G turns up, the connection speeds are so much faster, and the latency is so much lower, that they're going to be able to put screens basically everywhere. So, you know, because not to get too technical, but some of the processing will be able to go up into the cloud, and they'll be able to run it because it's just a device. So you could literally have a screen on anything. You know, so that's going to create a whole, you know, a new sort of paradigm in terms of where you can capture and show this stuff. So I think that's an interesting thing to watch. But I think Snap, there's some emerging TikToks channel that we're interested in. And I'm sure there's going to be others that pop up. Pinterest have just started running. I mean, they've had video for a while, but video ads. Netflix, again, I suspect at some point there's going to be ads on Netflix. It's still big.
It's a long way to go.
Yeah, video content. The other thing is, when you look at...
I've changed completely. I actually cancelled Sky and sent all the boxes back. I just... didn't watch
when was the last time
or
you watched
use
terrestrial
it
TV,
ever.
Like you're what everyone watches Stranger Things on Netflix.
Or YouTube, and you know, takes long enough just to watch Gary Vee's videos every day. It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's a sort of whole myth about 5G as well. There's this whole kind of conspiracy theory about how it's going to do anything. But I'm interested to tune in on that. And
I think the difference is that this is what I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know this. I've just learned it. But the difference is, when we went from 3G to 4G, it was sort of like it was all like a bit like this, a step up.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between 4G and 5G is like bosh.
Wow. Okay.
You know, it's like we're going from whatever it is, 50 to like 1,000.
Fine.
Massive.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's going.
What does that mean to the sort of consumer?
Well, from a video point of view, I mean, just like instantly there, you're not going to have to wait.
So actually, probably people can get through more video, can't they?
Yeah, because but just other stuff is things like you know, everything will be able to connect anything. Your shoes, you know, could be connected to the internet. Yeah. So with a tiny little chip,
that's like IoT basically.
Yeah, so IoT suddenly becomes a thing. Yeah. The big, you know, there's a lot of technology that has been around for a while, but just hasn't had the enabler.
Yeah,
5G suddenly enables it. So you know, Gil tells the story of, like, you know, you go to a hotel, the hotel realizes that you've left a pair of shoes at home, and they order the new pair. So when you get there, it's just stuff.
The reason I'm sort of interested in IoT and now how 5G would work with that is because I think it can drastically change real estate and the way property is used. Just like you said, with sort of understanding who's where in a building and providing services into particular rooms and different air pressures and lighting and heating, all the things that have been sort of played at with these apps on your phone. But I think can make buildings much more efficient. So effectively, if you can imagine a commercial building run like this, could have 10 times the amount of tenants here, using the facilities at different times.
Right, because you can just organise the...
Well, you would understand... Yeah, you'd be able to understand... If, I mean, bad example. Maybe these two rooms might not be used very much, but there'd be huge gaps of where these rooms could be used for something else, or could be.
Wow.
You know, there's I've watched some property stuff, and I'm very interested to learn more about it. But obviously, TAB wants to be at the forefront of not just, you know, you can own property in your phone, but I have this vision that there are TAB buildings. You instantly understand that you're living in or working in a building that is trading live on the on the TAB exchange. So I think that's all very interesting. Something worth.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, I only just started diving into this stuff, and I was like, okay, I need to learn more about this.
Yeah,
like, but definitely. Really cool.
Great.
The best thing is you're in London, so you're going to get it first.
Yeah. Unless you've got an iPhone, it turns out, which we're going to have to wait, you know, 2021 or something before those.
I think it's it'll be the next iPhone release, won't it?
No, it definitely won't.
Yeah, someone said it was not going to be to the then one after, and I was like, seriously?
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me. They're too fixated on finally catching up their cameras with what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
It's been great. I've really, really enjoyed it. It's nice to catch up generally, but I think it's quite interesting, and hopefully we'll get some feedback and see what people think. Yeah.